pleasant buzz of conversation here, and I'm reluctant to interrupt it because it sounds so nice, but we have a wonderful guest, so I thought we might get started. When we came in early this morning, all the tables were set with plates and flatware and glasses like we were going to have brunch, and we are not, so don't don't hope for that. Maybe we'll put that on the list for some other time. But we have as our forum guest this morning Annette Teese, who is a longtime member of St. Bartholomew's Church and has led our dream group here for 10 years, and she's been doing dream work for longer than that. We are very glad to have her here. Dreams are a subject dear to my own heart, and I have to begin this session with a confession. Annette prepared weeks ago, before I went on vacation, a very nice handout offering you books, resources on dreams, and I said, I will have those available. And my vacation brain is still with me a bit, so I have not had those at this, but we will make those available. I think I will put them on the web. You know, we record all the forums, and so if you'll go onto the web after today and find the forum recording, and we'll just link to the PDF of her handout, because she did have some wonderful books and resources on dreams. So I do apologize, but we'll try to recover in that way. I said, do you need the stand for notes? And she said, no, I thought I would just come and talk with you, the sign of a true expert, yes? And so we'll just have a conversation, and you will do most of the conversing, I think, and then we'll have time for questions and answers toward the end, if that's all right with you all. Tell me a little bit about how you came to be at St. Bart's, because you've been here. Actually, I met Annette when I first came a long time ago.
That was 30 years ago?
It was, yeah. I was trying to avoid that number, but that's it.
let's move on. We came to New York, and when I say we, I mean my family. My husband and two sons came to New York from London, and we lived out in Forest Hills and went to the local church there. And our two small sons were not impressed with this small church. They had been used to a large, active church in central London where we lived, and they wanted the same thing. So my husband suggested that we come here. And as soon as the boys saw some Barts, they said, this is it. So it's not the church that I chose, although I'm now glad that the boys said that. But that's how we got here.
And I remember the boys being little, but now they are giant people.
And yes. 6'3".
Which, as you saw, Annette, is just great. So how did you get interested in dreams particularly?
Well, I've always been a dreamer. And before I emigrated to the States, because you can all hear that I don't have quite an American accent, I had a repetitive dream, a dream that repeats itself. Or you sometimes call it a recurring dream. This dream was of me in the family car, and we were flying high in the car. And then it broke in half. And my parents and sister were in the front of the car, and that went off, and I was in the back by myself. And this dream repeated itself over and over as I was thinking about coming to live in the States. I'd done a lot of studying of American books and so on, and I really was intrigued with this country. And the dream made me think very seriously, obviously, about making such a big decision. But finally, I settled here, and the dream stopped. So it did what it was supposed to do, to make me really think about why I was here. And I'd love to know, how many of you have had flying dreams? Ah, yes. The hands go up. And you know, what's important about flying dreams is to look and see how high you are flying. In my flying dream, I was flying very high because it was a big decision. It was a deeply important decision. I have a friend in South Africa who's a big dreamer. She used to live in New York and wrote to me recently and said, I had a flying dream and I'm back in New York. I'm in Central Park with my friends and I am the official photographer for our picnic. And so she said, in the dream, I'm flying round and round and taking all the pictures. So she wasn't flying that high, maybe 10, 12 feet. And the dream, she said, helped her with a relationship that she was having. And so I say to you, when you have a flying dream, look and see how high you're flying. Because the higher the flying, the bigger the thing is that your dream is pointing to. Did you enjoy your flying dream? Did you fly high?
In one a long time ago, yes. And I was flying first class, so I enjoyed it quite a bit. But in a recent dream, I was flying. I was actually the pilot in a plane and lifted off. You know, it's one, just me in this plane. And it was sort of a new invention. I'm going to get in trouble for recording this, but it was a new kind of plane, so people were very excited about it, and lifted off, and the winds were high, and I got up to a certain point, and then it just, I couldn't make it go any further, and then I sat it down. So we didn't crash, but landed.
Good
for you. And so on one hand, I was very happy that and the machine were not harmed, but very disappointed that we couldn't make it keep going at that point. So it was like, we're gonna try again. Maury, I think it did. This is not to spread anxiety in the congregation.
You asked me anyway how I got into dream work.
Yeah, so you had this recurring dream, and
right.
it was a big decision. But then, so you had obviously been, were you working with this in England, or did you get into it here?
Oh, in England. When I got here and settled, then the dream stopped. But I continued to dream and remember my dreams. I've had a dream journal, about 30 years. Because in the early 80s, and there are some of you here who came to St. Bart's at that time, we used to have a parish retreat in the spring called Live the Faith, Faith Alive. And so there was an important person who would come and talk and give us a keynote speech and so on. And the first one I heard was, the speaker was Morton Kelsey. Morton Kelsey was a Episcopal priest and Jungian analyst, and he believed passionately in churches having dream groups. So right here in St. Bart's, when he was standing in the chancel and we were all sitting in the nave listening to this keynote speech, I heard him say, every church has a Bible study group, they may have a prayer team, but they also need a dream group. So I think, really, that's sowed the seed for what I do now here today.
That is interesting for me to hear, because I was also at that weekend. That was one of my first things here. And I was there and heard Morton Kelsey, but I did not hear those words. You heard those, and they spoke to you. So you started a dream group?
No, I started to record my dreams I went to a workshop to find out how you work with your dreams and begin to understand them as a lay person. And then eventually, much more recently, I went back to school. I went to seminary, to General Theological Seminary. And I have a degree from there in theology and Christian spirituality. And all the subjects that I was studying seemed to lead me towards dreams, and I found that I was writing papers on dreams. And when the time came to choose a subject for my thesis, I thought, okay, so I'll write something on dreams. And so I did. 90 pages of dreams. And in fact, there are only two graduates from General Seminary who've ever written about dreams. I am one of them, and the other one is a man called Robert Hayden, who now runs an institute in North Carolina to teach people how to understand their dreams and run dream groups. And he also runs an annual conference on dreams and dreaming, and that is a wonderful professional opportunity for me to meet with other Christian dreamers. We're beginning to have rabbis and other faiths coming too. 100-120 people doing what I do here. And that is very exciting and very uplifting.
Tell us a little bit about when Morton Kelsey said every church should have a dream group, and you clearly are called to this ministry. What is it you all do in the dream group? Can you tell us that without upsetting any confidences?
I certainly can. In fact, I meant to say right at the beginning, thank you to my dream group members who are here today, and thank you to all of you for coming to hear something about dreams, because it gives me an opportunity to talk to a wider group of people about what we do. Now, let me think, how do I start this? What do we do in the dream group? Would you like that first of all?
Yeah, I know there's a dream group. I've read it in our publications, and you all seem to meet for, what, 6, 7, 8 weeks, or every other week?
We meet every week for about 6 weeks, and then we take a break, and then we meet again. So we have one more group this week, Wednesday, at 6:45. We meet for 1.5 hours, and then we'll take a break, and then begin again in the fall. There's so much to do in New York, and there's so many things that we can do on Wednesday night at St. Bart's that it's good to give the dreamers an opportunity to also go to other things. So that's why we meet in that sort of pattern. My fellow dream group leaders who I meet at the annual conference usually meet every week, but then they're in smaller communities and they don't have all the excitement of New York around them.
To go to get more material for your dreams when you do this.
Right. So what happens in the dream group? Well, first, I usually make some comment about dreams that are part of the lectionary of the week, the lessons that we read through the week. This, or saints. This week there have been some big dreams. Saint Oswald was the dreamer on Monday. And he was a king of Northumbria, a little kingdom in England in the 7th century, when there were lots of kings and they were all fighting with each other. And this was just before a battle that he had a vision. He and his soldiers were greatly outnumbered and very nervous about how they would fare. So he took a big cross and he got his soldiers to dig a deep hole. And he, the king himself, stood and held that cross while they packed all the earth around it. And then he asked his soldiers to kneel in prayer. Now we have to remember that probably only a dozen of these people were Christians. But he prayed that God would protect them and that they would be successful. He went to sleep that night and had a vision. And in his vision, he saw St. Columba spread his cloak over all the soldiers and give them protection. Now, Oswald, King Oswald, as he was a Celtic Christian. He had, in fact, run off to Ireland to be safe with all these warring that was going on. So St. Columba was really important to him. So he woke the next day and told his soldiers the story, and this really uplifted them. And even though they were a small army, they succeeded, and he was king, and things were very peaceful for a few years, and then it started all over again. And then Tuesday was the Feast of the Transfiguration, which I would like to say is the biggest numinous experience in the New Testament. So there's usually something about dreams and saints or biblical stories. Today, in the Old Testament reading, we hear about Abram, as he was called then. Abram had a dream. And in fact, what's the time?
10:25-ish.
Okay. I think I'd like to invite Abram into the dream group this morning and tell you the dream from his 21st century viewpoint. But maybe there's something else you want to ask first?
I'm intrigued to see how you would do that. Go for it.
A couple of things before I begin to say to you. In the Bible, dreams, visions, appearances of angels, all these things that I roughly call dreams, but perhaps should say numinous experiences. All these things, these terms, dreams, visions, appearances of angels, are used interchangeably in the Bible. They don't really differentiate. I think today most people here think of dreams as hopes and plans for the future. And then secondly, nighttime experiences. And then thirdly, visions are things that perhaps you have in the daytime. Isn't that how people think about it these days? Yeah, you're nodding. So, I want you to think about Abram, and you have come into the dream group, and he is there too. Perhaps I should say to you that the dream group begins with stillness and silence. We recognize that we're moving into a sacred space. We have a few moments of silence, and then I end it with an open-ended prayer. And in fact, we close the dream group with a brief closure. So it's open to people who have other faiths. We do sometimes have Jewish people, people with Buddhist backgrounds. We're not always Christians in our dream group. We're not always Zimbabwe people. So then we choose who the dreamer would be, and it's usually the person who says, I really need to work on my dream. Sometimes we have a lot of dreams, and sometimes we really have to think deeply about whose dream we will do. So the dreamer tells the dream, and then the group make it their own. We look at this dream as if we have woken up this morning with it. This is called the projection method. And then we look at the emotions in the dream and how our own emotions, because it's now our own property. We look at the images and symbols and see them metaphorically. You know, God's way of speaking to us is almost always metaphorical. And this is the way our dreams communicate to us. And then we put the dream into the context of the dreamer, and then go on from there. And almost always, the dreamer who makes the last comment says, wow, I cannot believe that all of you have come up with all of this incredible information and connections that I would never have thought of on my own. And this is why we do it in a group, because other people can keep us grounded, they can open us up. And you have to remember there are two very important things in the dream group, apart from confidentiality. Everything we hear in the dream group stays in the dream group, except the dream. Dreams can always be told, because in fact, I know from personal experience that we dream for each other. And so you can always tell a dream, but not the personal information that goes on in the dream group. But so when people come who are new, and everyone can come, whether they have a dream or not, and you can come on Wednesday. When they come, there are two things I say are very important. First of all, the discovery element. We are here to help the dreamer discover things about their dream, maybe themselves, that they didn't know. And secondly, the safety factor. They do not have to share anything or say anything that they don't want to say. So although I'm called the leader of the group, it's really more that I'm taking people through the process and keeping us on track, that we remember to do all the things we should do. But it's not that I'm leading, because I become part of the group the same as everybody else. It's much more a servant leader role, that I'm doing exactly what everybody else is doing. So then we begin. Are we going to begin with Abraham?
Yes. I see people going yes.
Okay.
We're intrigued.
And then
intrigued.
In about 5 minutes, I'll take the questions.
That's great.
That sound right? Okay. So you were in the dream group, and today Abraham has come to the dream group, and we've decided we'd like to hear his dream. This is the dream that will be the Old Testament reading when we go into church. Or if you were at 9 o'clock, you've already heard it. But I want to tell you the dream as someone today might tell it, and give you some thoughts about how the dream group would respond if this was so. So my first thing that I say to the dreamer is, please tell your dream in the present tense. Dreams must always be remembered in the present tense, because they are timeless. And if something in the dream happened in the past, then you can use the past tense. But otherwise, try and recall your dreams in the present tense. So this is Abraham, and he is telling his dream. I am on the phone to my best friend, and I am complaining again about the fact that I don't have any children. And this disheartens me and bothers me, and I cannot get it out of my head. So my friend says, you're still on that, are you? I'm going to come over and cheer you up. Next scene, my friend is in the doorway, and he says, come outside, it's a beautiful night, you need a bigger view of life. So we go outside, and there are the stars in the sky looking absolutely fabulous. We are New Yorkers, we don't see stars like the way they did there. So my friend says, you know, you really shouldn't worry about not having a child. I know it's going to be all right. You're going to have a child eventually. Everybody does. So I think, well, maybe my friend is right. The conversation goes on, but that is the essence of my dream. Maybe my friend is right. End of dream. Dream group now says, aha. The dream group looks at the emotions in the dream and talks about being depressed and disheartened and so on. And then they move on to the images and symbols in the dream. The images of friend. You may wonder why I call, you know the story. I call the person on the phone, the person communicating is in fact God. And the book of James speaks of Abraham as God's friend. That is a very rare distinction in the Bible. Then there are the being outside. I mean, right now we're inside in an enclosed area. We have something of a vision. But when we go outside to Park Avenue, we have a much bigger view. And the friend in the dream is trying to get Abraham to take a bigger view, a bigger picture. And they look at the stars. And what are stars as a metaphor? They're gold. Gold is precious. They give light. Abraham was looking for light. And in those days, stars were very much the GPS for everybody. They knew where they were by the stars. If they took a journey, they would plan their route by the stars. So all these things were important to Abraham's dream, or are important because he's here in the dream group. So these are the sort of things we would be discussing with him. So that, let's close the door on the dream group, and I want to say one other thing about the story in the Bible that we will hear. This is the first dream in Genesis 15 of Abraham being told by God he will have a son. And he isn't really convinced, because three chapters later there is another dream where he has three visitors giving him the story that you are going to have a son. We read that 2 weeks ago. Somehow our lectionary has it backwards, but we know that. And we also know that Abraham still wasn't convinced, because he had a child by Hagar. He couldn't wait to have one with Sarah. So for us, I would say this is a message for us. Our dreams tell us over and over in different ways the messages that we need to hear. And for me, dreams are perhaps the most fun spiritual discipline. I mean, all of us read the Bible, all of us pray. But dreams for me are the most intimate, and perhaps the ones, the spiritual discipline that connects me most closely to God, because the dream comes from me, and yet God is speaking to me in that dream.
It's a lot better than fasting.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Talking about fasting, I once taught a Sunday school class here, and I was going through a fasting period and very enthusiastic about fasting, and was so worried afterwards that the young girls in the class were going to be anorexic because I had enthused them so much.
That is wonderful. So you experience dreams as a way that God speaks to us and through us, and not just to me, but to anyone I share the dream with.
Yes, and yeah. God speaks to us in our dreams in sometimes the funniest ways. I haven't got time to talk about the humor of dreams and the puns and so on, but I will share one little dream. I had a dream the other night. A Hispanic man invites me to a party. And then the dream goes on, and it's really a wacky dream. So then that evening, my son called me and said, "Oh, Mom, I've got this big proposal to do at work, and it's so awful, and I'm so fed up. And I called you to cheer me up." "Oh," I said, "I'll tell you a dream. I had a dream. This Hispanic man is inviting me to a party." And went on to tell him all the funny things in the dream, and he laughed. And he said, "Great, thank you, I knew you'd lift my spirits, my panic's gone." And he hung up, and I thought, oh, his panic, this is why I had this dream.
What a wonderful example. Yeah.
So now it's time for questions.
Okay.
I know you've got them.
We have a microphone, so if you will ask your question into the microphone so that we can all hear it. Brian, Virginia is right here.
Yes, thank you. Well, now, you said that everyone in the dream group can have that dream of Abrams, for example. So what would other people get out of that dream in their own life situation. Can you suggest a few things, or what happened?
I think that if it was my response, I think that all the things that I mentioned about the stars uplifting me because they're precious would be very important to me. But another thing, for me as a 21st century person, stars are celebrities. They are people that I look up to. So it might be there's something going on in my life at the moment that is connecting me with that. But the thing is, each of us are individual, and that's the richness of the dream group, that the different people have a different look, have have different contributions to make to the group that enrich the whole thing. So maybe you want to go home and read that again, or even on the way home, just switch on your device, whatever you have, and Google Genesis 15 space 1-21. Take the whole chapter, because I think chapter 15, we only read 6 verses in church, but I think that that chapter is a section out of Abraham's dream book, because it's quite wacky, and it talks about pigeons and goats and flaming embers, and it's never read in church because it's quite weird. But everybody will get something different out of it.
Thank you. Brian, behind you there.
Hi, I'm Charlotte. I really enjoyed, I've always wanted to come to your dream group, and I just have never made time to do it. And I'm so glad when I walked into church this morning that you were the speaker. It was just like meant to be. But I've always been interested in dreaming. My aunt studied at the Edgar Cayce Institute in Virginia. Mm-hmm. So when I was a little girl, she taught a dream class in the 60s in our little town in Missouri, and everybody thought she was really weird. And I've always been interested in dreaming, and I used to keep a little recorder next to my bed, and when I woke up in the morning, I'd speak my dream into the recorder, so then I could, because I, you know how you just forget your dreams sometime if you don't record them right away. But a couple of questions. First of all, Abraham was married to Sarah, is that right?
Yes.
And she was in her 70s when she finally had a baby?
Yes.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Talking about fertility issues, I mean, that's wild. Second of all, do you recommend Man and His Symbols as one of the books to read on dreaming?
So it's good. It's good when you're working on your own dreams to have a symbol dictionary or book about symbols, but don't look at it, don't use it. Use your own imagination, talk to your friends, and so on. And if you get really stuck, then perhaps the symbol dictionary can help you. But the same thing can have two different impacts. For example, let me ask you, do you like dogs?
Yes, I have a Cavalier King Charles.
Okay, I am terrified of dogs. I was bitten as a little girl. So when we think about the image of a dog, you're going to think, oh, warm, loving thoughts, and I'm going to be tense and holding back. So a symbol dictionary is not going to help everybody because we're all so different.
Because the Jungian thing I find very interesting, but you know, I guess my other question I wanted to ask is, because dreams are so prominent in the Bible and they keep coming up, I mean, it's just constant, the dreams, the visions, and this is my third church I belong to. I was raised Baptist. I was baptized in the Catholic Church, and I ended up at Church of England. Why don't you think churches are more, I mean, this is the only church I've ever belonged to that had a dream group. Why don't you think churches talk more about dreams, or like, have more interest in dreaming and visions? I mean, it seems like it's almost kind of like voodoo, you know, they they almost deny dreams in the modern day.
They do, and that's the sad thing, and that's why I'm pioneering what I'm doing. And we need to spread good words about dreams, because the Bible is alive with dreams and visions, and we just don't see it. But we're beginning to hear. And there are many other churches, especially around North Carolina, where the Hayden Institute is, where every church has a dream group, maybe more than one. So, and the Diocese of Arkansas, they had a bishop who was a dreamer, and they have dream groups everywhere, in every church.
Is that Episcopal?
Yes. Yes, these are all Episcopal.
I think, Linda, I saw one hand and two. That's probably all we'll have time to do.
Could you talk to us a little bit about the connection between dreams and psychology and sort of mysticism? Because I never thought of the visions in the Bible being the same, you know, genre of dreams that we would have. So can you just give us an overview of how those are connected?
Dreams, psychology. Usually that question comes up because people who've been educated in the 20th century see psychology and dreams as linked. Freud got on the world stage in 1900 and said, interpretation of dreams, and everybody thinks psychology and dreams. That's a different way of working with dreams than when you look at it spiritually, but the way we work with dreams here is spiritual, but also has help from psychology and neurophysics. The neuroscientists are the people making the big discoveries about dreams these days, and they are understanding our brain and how the dreaming mind works, and we're learning a great deal that way. So and this is all so new. There's so much that we can be learning that it's hard to try and sort of put the Bible into nuclear physics, not nuclear physics. And one more thing I must say is that the last two conferences I've been to, I've been studying quantum physics and dreaming. So there's just so much that can be done. And it's not a full answer for you, but I hope that helps.
I think we have time for one more. Karen had her hand up.
Do you look at dreams in categories? You talked about flying dreams, but I'm sure many people, including me, have had falling dreams where I've kicked myself awake trying to stop from falling. Is that sort of the opposite?
But I don't think it's the opposite, but it's another. Flying dreams are classic dreams, and so are falling dreams. You have to remember that when you're asleep, your brain is in a different gear, so that certain processes are switched, are offline, if I can use a computer term. So if you're in bed and the bear is, you're asleep, and the bear is chasing you and you can't get away, it is because the messages from the brain to the legs to say run are actually switched off, because your brain is in sleeping mode, not in waking mode. So that's why you wake yourself up. I wouldn't say that it's the opposite. I'd have to think about that. Thank you for giving me a good question to consider. And thank you all for your questions. I wish that we could be here for another hour. But sweet dreams, everybody.
You can always come back. Thank you all. I think we better get to church for those of us who need to do that. Thank you, and check online for Annette's the recorded part of this and the PDF of her wonderful handout. Thank you.
Was that okay?
You're still on.
Mm.
Thank you.
Oh.
Good to see you.
I have to switch this.